case for argument, United States v. Williams, Ms. Chiarello.
May it please the Court, I'm Elizabeth Trello and I represent Corvette Williams. I do not represent Brian Austin, but for the sake of efficiency in this argument, I will be making a joint argument as to both. The defendants in this case were each sentenced to 54 years imprisonment after having been convicted of 2 counts of armed robbery and 2 counts of using a firearm during the commission of a crime of violence. Our contention on appeal is about the denial of the defendants' first request for a continuance of the trial date. Trial was scheduled to begin October 22nd, and on the morning of their pretrial conference, October 17th, the defendants received notice that Edward Walker...
But looking back, what is it you think you have lost that you would have had if you'd had the continuance? Because you did have several days, right?
Well,
so you wanted more. So if you'd had more time, what would have come out that would have made a difference or would have been likely to make a difference in the case?
2 points, Your Honor. One, the defendants did receive notice of Edward Walker's proposed testimony on October 17th, but didn't receive even any information that he had turned over the gun purportedly used in the robbery until until Saturday morning, October 20th, and so had one non-business day to begin even processing that information. So they had less time than even a couple of days, and these were not even business days. With more time, they would have tried to follow up on the person who turned over the gun.
So what would they have found if they'd done additional research? Do we know? Maybe we don't know.
That's part of the catch-22 of this case, is that they didn't have the time to do this investigation, and even if we had the results of that investigation, this isn't a habeas proceeding, wouldn't be allowed to supplement the record with the results of those findings. But, I mean, some of the things that they wanted to do were...
You could make an offer of proof, or you could at least... Sometimes things emerge, you know, after a trial, so it's been some time. I'm just wondering what you could have found out about Walker or anything else that would have made a difference.
The defense counsel was attempting to contact... I mean, they did try and interview Mr. Walker in the time, you know, before he testified, but they were turned down by his attorney, weren't able to interview him.
Yes, I know, but so what? That had nothing to do with delay. He wasn't going to be interviewed.
Well, there were other things that came out of, you know, his testimony that they would have liked to have interviewed. They were finding out things for the first time on the stand. They didn't know...
Wait, what do you mean interview? He doesn't have to be interviewed, does he?
Well, not him, but, for example, he had a robbery conviction on his record, which they just found out, you know...
And that was disclosed. He was impeached with that, wasn't he?
He was, but the circumstances of that robbery...
You're not allowed to do that with impeachment. You're not allowed to dwell on the circumstances, right? You're just supposed to ask a simple question. Isn't that correct? You're not supposed to go into the details. I thought that was a rule.
I'm not sure on that.
Isn't that right? That was a rule.
I mean, if the robbery was similar to the way this robbery was committed, that's something I think they would have at least tried to get in. You know, they might have looked into his bank records, interview his friends, see if he spent more than the share of the proceeds that he said he... took from this robbery. I mean, he's the only one who has come forward and said that he's the one who took his mother's car as to be used as a second getaway car. He's the one who bought the gloves and the masks at Farm and Fleet.
What was to prevent them from checking? You say his bank records? He has a bank account?
Well, I don't know. I mean, these are things that they would have wanted to check into. They told the district court there's a lot of background check we would want to run.
Ask the government whether he had a bank account?
I mean, I would assume they'd have to subpoena it. His bank records, and not
well,
just that.
Did they
make
any effort during the several days they had to speak to the prosecutor about helping them find whatever they needed?
I mean, on this record, the only thing that shows up that they tried to do was contact Mr. Walker through his attorney, and you know, one of the trial counsel was out of town for the two days preceding the trial. And, you know, these defense counsel are preparing for 30-some witnesses that the government was going to put on the stand. I mean, it's, all of this stuff is coming out at the last minute, the fact that there's this mysterious gun that Edward Walker has been keeping and says was used in the robbery. This comes out 2 days before trial.
When did they start preparing the other 30 witnesses?
When did they start?
Yeah.
I mean, they were pursuing speedy trial objections along the entire way. They were ready to go on this case when they thought it was a two-man robbery.
When did they start preparing the other witnesses or interviewing the other witnesses?
I'm not sure. I wasn't trial counsel.
What if they started 2 days earlier? I mean, what if defense lawyers only spend a few days with these witnesses?
Well, clearly there was more they wanted to do with Edward Walker than the time they had. They told the district court, you know, there's a lot of fruitful impeachment here. We don't know his background. We don't know his motivations. We don't know any bias he might have had, you know, might have with these defendants.
Well, he was a different kind of witness. I mean, you just mentioned having the theory change from a two-man to a three-man theory.
Right.
And you suggested in your brief that maybe it was a two-man robbery and Walker was one of them.
Right.
I suppose that would be something that you would have been looking into.
That would definitely be something we'd be looking into. I mean, the government's theory of this case changed, you know, drastically a few days before trial.
How long a continuance did he want?
Well, the court never asked them how much time they wanted. In this court's case,
I don't understand. They didn't say how long a continuance they wanted?
They didn't put out an actual, you know,
number
of weeks.
They filed an electronic motion on Sunday?
They did. They filed an electronic motion on Sunday. Same thing happened in this court, in a case, Carlson versus Jess, in this court. It was a habeas case.
Did they ever tell the judge how much time they wanted?
The judge never asked.
Well, of course. Can't you tell a judge, look, all I want is X days or Y days? Because maybe if they ask for a continuance, the judge thinks, oh, they want an indefinite continuance.
Well, no, I mean,
they,
you know, 6 weeks might have been appropriate.
Why don't they specify the number of days they want?
Then me, I would have said 6 weeks would be appropriate.
I can't hear you.
If it had been me, I would have said 6 weeks would be appropriate. But the district
six
court
weeks?
Was unwilling to, you know, consider any delay.
Well, we don't know that because he wasn't given specifics, you know, proposal.
These were the exact same facts in this court's case, Carlson versus Jess. In that case, the district court did not ask.
You're speaking too fast and too softly. I can't hear you.
The same facts were present in this court's case, Carlson versus Jess. It was a habeas case in which the state trial judge did not ask the defense counsel how much time they wanted. They would need for a continuance. And this court said apparently that judge was unwilling to consider any request for a delay. And that kind of myopic insistence on, you know, expeditiousness in the face of a justifiable request for a delay can only be characterized as arbitrary and a violation of due process. And the same circumstances are present here. You know, all of these factors in this court, the seven-factor test that this court applies in determining whether a continuance is warranted, they all favor defendants. The government has conceded that several of these factors favor the defendants. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, so I'd like to save the rest of it.
Thank you. Mr. Fullerton?
May it please the court. The district court did not abuse its discretion in refusing to grant a continuance of the trial based on the disclosure of Edward Walker as a government witness about 1 week before he testified.
But, you know, the problem here is that it was really very much up to the government to pop this on the defense at the last second. If the government had gone to Mr. Walker considerably before this and offered him the immunity deal, there's nothing to suggest that he wouldn't have taken it. Of course, he didn't want to testify without some kind of protection, but it seems to me it's the government that really put everybody in this very difficult position.
Well, two things, Your Honor. First, Edward Walker was not unknown to the defendants.
Well, right, but they didn't have the power to give him immunity,
right.
And you did.
In preparation for trial, Mr. Walker was subpoenaed about a month before trial. He was served with a subpoena.
And that's up to the government. I'm saying the government knew about Mr. Walker all along.
We didn't know what the government didn't know what he would say or whether he would cooperate.
Of course not. But if you had wanted to pursue Mr. Walker and find out what he was going to say, you could have sat down with him, and if you found out that he was busily invoking his Fifth Amendment privileges, then you might have considered immunity.
And the district
and indeed, that's what you did right. In the end.
And you're right, Your Honor. The district court was expressed some displeasure with the fact that the government had found out about Mr. Walker so late in the
game. Well, and really, let's just say followed up on Mr. Walker so late in the day. You finally decided, once you decided to give him this immunity, that he had some very important things to say for the government's case.
But the
all the details, in other words. Every last one of them. Where these things were bought, what kind of car, on and on.
Right. But the district court did nevertheless take some steps to ensure that this late disclosure of Mr. Walker would not prejudice the defendants. For example,
do you think those were meaningful steps in the real world? Here's this one lawyer who's got depositions all day in Milwaukee, the Thursday and Friday of that week. He practically begs the judge. The judge says, well, you can file your motion electronically. So he does on Sunday. The judge comes in Sunday morning. The trial is supposed to start Monday.
The judge also invited the other defense attorney to file a motion as well, and that was not done.
Well, and he eventually joins the... So
he eventually joined the motion that was filed, that was considered on the date of, on the morning of the trial.
But the lawyers, and the government concedes this, the lawyers are both indicating to the judge, we're going to need a continuance on this. They're trying to figure out what to do. Defense lawyers don't have infinite resources to go
send
the investigators off after people.
The district court took some steps, and I want to make sure I lay them out. One, the district court made sure that the government made full disclosure of the discovery material it had on Mr. Walker the day that he was disclosed, that is, the Wednesday before.
Why didn't he ask them how much time they needed?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that. The defense attorneys did not offer a specific amount of time that they needed, and they really didn't spend.
Yes, I don't know. Everything seems so stiff. Why didn't they ask them?
Look,
you've asked for a continuance. You haven't told me how much time you need. I'm not going to grant an open-ended continuance. So tell me what you need.
Well, the defense had several opportunities to specify how much time they
needed. Why didn't the judge ask them? I don't understand that.
I don't know why the judge did not ask, Your Honor. But the district court did...
You'd think the biggest consideration for the judge is fitting a different trial date into his schedule. Well, I don't know how he could begin to think about that until he knew how much of continuance they wanted.
I mean, it makes you think he really wasn't seriously considering granting any continuance, because if he already had in his mind that the number was zero, then why bother to ask?
Well, I think it's because the district court thought that it had adequately addressed, as well as it could, the
without
disclosure.
A continuance. I mean, in other words, it wasn't considering continuance.
Right, but
so it gives him these 2 days plus 2 weekend days.
Not only did the court make these steps to address the possible prejudice, but it was also considering the type of case it was. This is not the testimony of Mr. Walker. It was not the type of testimony, for example, that's especially complex.
If it's now a two-man case and you've got two men on trial and here's this third person, it suggests there's a theory anyway that at least one of them doesn't belong there.
Judge, I think that the two-man theory of the robbery, including Mr. Walker, and excluding the defendants, would never have flown, no matter when the trial was held, because the other evidence was so inconsistent with these defendants not being part of the robbery. For example, Mr. Williams, who was stopped, he was a passenger in a car driven by Mr. Walker's cousin the afternoon that the second robbery took place. And when the police obtained the consent of the driver of the car to search the vehicle, they found in the back seat the driver's purse that contained a large sum of money, including $200 in bait bills.
But she's a cousin of Mr. Walker, though, right? Isn't
right.
she? So, you know, I'm not sure that that's such a slam dunk against...
She was the testimony also that she was the girlfriend of Mr. Williams.
Right, okay, so she knows everybody. So how do we know who gave her the money?
Well, that in conjunction with the other evidence, including the fact that
Yeah, but you see, you have a problem. It's one thing to argue harmless error when particular evidence has been excluded, and then you ask, well, if it had been whatever... But if you cut off someone's investigation, then you don't know what evidence would have been in and how the case would have looked if the continuance had been granted.
But that really goes to the speculative nature of the prejudice that they're arguing here.
Of course it's speculative. If you don't permit someone to invest, that would be like arguing harmless error when you've denied a person a lawyer. You say, well, the case was overwhelming. We certainly needed a lawyer. In fact, we didn't really need a trial. The case was overwhelming. So it was perfectly fine to take him directly to prison after he was arrested, right? So there are limitations on using harmless error when you've truncated the inquiry into the facts.
You're right. There are obviously limitations on that, but the district court really wasn't presented with a concrete example of what further investigation would have been needed for.
I don't know what the investigation will yield until they conduct it.
And it's never been conducted. And it's till this.
Do you think they had a duty to conduct it after the trial?
Well, but to this day, there's been no.
Well, what are they supposed to do during the appeal? Are they supposed to supplement the record and say we conducted an investigation after the end of the trial? This is what we found.
You would be objecting if they were moving in the district court to supplement the record that way, I assure you.
So what are they supposed to do?
Well, I think they needed to come up with some
specific. How did they try to come up with it? What if you don't let them investigate?
Well, that was for the district court to evaluate then. Whether if these
How
are confronted
evaluate
with.
Evaluate what no one has done yet. I don't understand you. Of course he can deny a continuance if it seems strategic, or I would say if it's going to disrupt his schedule and so on, that would be a very powerful factor. But he didn't mention anything about his schedule. Which is unusual. I mean, that's usually the basic reason why you don't grant a continuance. It throws off your schedule.
Well, I want to return to the one item of specific non-conjectural evidence that the defendants did claim they needed a continuance for, which is to obtain the testimony of, I think the witness was named Don Catalina, who
this
was
the guy who was halfway to California by the time
he had been released from the government subpoena and had been on his way out of town at the time the trial was held. He had, in fact, there was a stipulation reached between the government and the defense about what his testimony would be, namely that he had observed, instead of three robbers, two robbers running from the one car to the second getaway car after the second robbery. Now, Mr. Catalina, it's true, was not present at trial, but in addition to having the stipulation about his testimony, the defense had the testimony of two other witnesses to the second robbery who both said, and one was, I believe, named Noe, and the other one was named Harlan, who described seeing two robbers instead of three at various stages after the robbery took place. So I'm not sure that the unavailability of Mr. Catalina for his live testimony really adds something incrementally to the prejudice that's been shown here by the failure to grant a continuance. So for all these reasons, we think the district court didn't abuse its discretion and properly denied the motion to continue. We ask you to affirm the judgment below.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fullerton. So we have a new lawyer, Mr. Fagan.
Thank you, Judge. Good morning, Your Honors. Robert Fagan on behalf of Mr. Austin. And again, I'll be arguing the rebuttal for both defendants for the purposes of efficiency. An attempt to try to answer some of the court's questions of Ms. Chiarello. Problems with this case, Judge, and what we would have found out, hopefully, would be to try to explain some of the objective contradictions that Mr. Walker's testimony brought up. By objective contradictions, I'm suggesting Mr. Walker suggested that during the second robbery, all three gentlemen were together in a car for 3 hours prior to the robbery. However, Mr. Williams and Mr. Austin's phone records would objectively contradict that.
The cell phone records?
Yes, ma'am. Not only that they were, quote-unquote, chirping one another, but that the chirps were being bounced off of geographically distinct cell towers, which would suggest that they were not together. In addition to that, it would have contradicted the objective testimonial evidence of both the victim at the second bank robbery, Mr. No, the grandmother on the Vassar Drive, Ms. Harlan, and, of course, the stipulation of Mr. Catalina. The reason that Mr. Catalina's testimony would be helpful, number one, he would be a live witness and the jury would be able to assess his credibility, but Mr. No, on cross-examination, admitted that he could not see the entirety of the car. There might have been more than two people in the car when it left the bank. This is the first getaway car. The reason that Mr. Catalina's testimony would have been helpful on the Vassar Drive, where the perpetrators left one getaway car and moved to the second getaway car, was that Ms. Harlan testified that she looked away for a second because her grandchild that she was watching cried, and then she looked back at the window. So there would be some question in the jury's mind whether she missed the third person that might have gotten out of the second getaway or the first getaway car and then went to the second getaway car. Judges, the thing that bothers me about this case is the timing of not only when the government attempted to get Mr. Walker's testimony through the immunization policy, but also the timing of the cancellation of the subpoena. We had no reason as the defense counsel to interview Mr. Walker prior to this. We had a half paragraph on one page of discovery which suggested that he had been interrogated by the police on a different matter that he had been arrested for, and that he had declined to answer any questions about the bank robbery and had made reservation of his rights under the Fifth Amendment. With the resources that we have, judges, we just don't go after witnesses that don't appear to be of any help to either side. We certainly couldn't, as Judge Wood suggested, we certainly had nothing to offer him in an attempt to get his cooperation. The other thing, Judge, that I've already suggested, the timing issue regarding the subpoena and the immunization, but the contradiction to the objective evidence. In addition, Mr. Walker's testimony brought up at least four additional witnesses which we would want to have interviewed, which included his brother, who was involved in switching cars, his sister, who supposedly was involved, and his girlfriend, who was the one that we eventually found out was the person that delivered this gun to the FBI agent.
That's Dolanda?
Yes, Dolanda. We didn't have the opportunity to do that. These witnesses would, of course, have been able to help us try to resolve some of these contradictions. There's no question, Your Honors, that no one asked the district court for the amount of time necessary, but from a practical standpoint, as I'm sure Your Honors know, once you get the determination of whether a continuance is going to be granted, the amount of coordination that would have to be involved between the district court schedule and the attorney's schedules would be such that that would be the determining factor as to when the new trial would be scheduled. So whether we asked for 5 days or 15 days, it quite frankly wouldn't have mattered. What would have mattered would when be the district court's availability and the attorney's availability. I don't think there's any question in 16 years, Judge, I think I said to the district court, there was more things changed in a case with at least time available in which to deal with them. As far as Mr. Austin was concerned, we were ready for trial in May based upon the case that we knew about. The case that we found out about on the Wednesday before trial was a completely different case. The prosecution basically was the personification of the prosecution was Edward Walker. I don't care what you want to call him. We called him a star witness, whether you call him the linchpin, however you want to call him. The government in their closing argument suggested that he was the person who not only tied together all the evidence but corroborated some of the evidence. We certainly have identified what we feel to be the abuse of the discretion of the district court, and we believe that we were prejudiced. And I thank Your Honors for your attention.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Fagan and Ms. Chiarello, for accepting the appointment, for your vigorous efforts on behalf of your client. And we thank Mr. Fullerton as well. And the court will be in recess until sometime in the future.